Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Intel Corporation fourth quarter 2014 earnings conference call. Thank you for your patience. We do apologize for the delay, as we were experiencing a technical issue. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require audio assistance during the conference, please press star then zero to reach an operator. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the call over to Mark Henninger.
Thank you, Jamie, and welcome everyone to Intel's fourth quarter 2014 earnings conference call. By now, you should have received a copy of our earnings release and the CFO commentary that goes along with it. If you've not received both documents, they're available on our investor website, intc.com. I'm joined today by Brian Krzanich, our CEO, and Stacy Smith, our Chief Financial Officer. In a moment, we'll hear brief remarks from both of them, followed by the Q&A. Before we begin, let me remind everyone that today's discussion contains forward-looking statements based on the environment as we currently see it, and as such, does include risks and uncertainties. Please refer to our press release for more information on the specific risk factors that could cause actual results to differ materially. Also, if during this call we use any non-GAAP financial measures or references, we'll post the appropriate GAAP financial reconciliation to our website, intc.com. With that, let me hand it over to Brian.
Thanks, Mark. The fourth quarter marked a strong finish to a great year. We began 2014 expecting roughly flat year-over-year revenue and operating income. Instead, the company's full-year revenue grew 6%, setting an all-time record of $55.9 billion. At the same time, operating income rose 25%. When I became CEO, I set two imperatives for the company. First, develop a more outside-in view of markets to ensure we go to where the markets are heading. Second, increase our velocity or pace of innovation in a purposeful direction. Over the last year, we've made meaningful progress against these imperatives, which helped us meet and exceed many of our top goals. I'd like to take a moment to review the year. In the PC Client Group, our goal was to stabilize the PC business. We expected revenue to be down by a low single-digit percentage and for operating profit to be roughly flat year-over-year. Instead, the year closed with a 4% increase in revenue and a 25% increase in operating profit. Our focus on reinventing the computing experience and leaving no segment unserved, from the low end to the high end, contributed to these results. We launched Broadwell on the world's first 14-nanometer manufacturing process. While we did have some startup challenges that contributed to roughly six-month delay, yields have steadily improved. The end result is a family of Core-M and fifth-generation Core processors that are the foundation for the industry's most compelling new designs. These designs include the thinnest, lightest, and most energy-efficient notebooks, two-in-ones, Ultrabooks, Chromebooks, and mini PCs. We began the year with high expectations for the Data Center Group. We said we would capitalize on the growth of the cloud and big data by diversifying customer segments and product leadership. We initially forecasted revenue growth in the low to mid-teens, with operating profit growing faster than revenue. We exceeded those high expectations and grew revenue 18%, while operating profit expanded by a remarkable 31%. In the Mobile and Communications Group, we set a goal to ship into 40 million tablets in 2014. This goal was intended to establish Intel architecture in the marketplace and scale the supply chain and attract developers. I'm pleased to report that we shipped into 46 million tablets, becoming one of the industry's largest merchant silicon providers in tablets. We also began shipping our second-generation LTE baseband, known as 7260. We're proud that the company reached these milestones, but we have more work ahead of us. A key goal for mobility is to improve profitability. To that end, we just qualified the first SoC in our SoFIA lineup. SoFIA is a low-cost integrated applications processor and baseband chip. As it ramps, it will progressively reduce the bill of material cost that have adversely affected our gross margins in the mobile business. We also struck landmark agreements with Rockchip and Sprinter to expand the development and distribution of IA products for phones and tablets. Similarly, we grew other adjacent businesses by using IP from our core products. For example, our Internet of Things group grew 19% in 2014, passing the $2 billion mark for the first time. The recently launched RealSense 3D camera technology is another example of extending our IP. RealSense is redefining imaging in a variety of computing devices. It's also making its way into all sorts of new and unanticipated applications, highlighting the value of taking an outside-in view, investing ahead of trends, and shaping nascent technology. Finally, you see us moving quickly into wearables through our growing portfolio of collaborations with world-class fashion and fitness brands like Fossil, Oakley, Opening Ceremony, and SMS Audio, along with our own products like the Basis Peak and the Curie module, a computer the size of a button. Intel is in a very different place today than we were just 12 months ago. We are participating in a broader range of devices, and we are innovating in emerging segments. These are the trends we'll build on in 2015, bringing us closer to our vision that if it's smart and connected, it is best with Intel. Our work isn't done, but our progress against our imperatives leaves us increasingly confident in our strategy. With that, let me turn the call over to Stacy.
Thanks, Brian. To reiterate what Brian said, the fourth quarter was a strong finish to a great year. Revenue of $14.7 billion was a record for the company and was up 6% from the prior year. The strength of our product portfolio can be seen in our gross margin of over 65% and in our profitability. Operating income grew 25%, and earnings per share, which also benefited from the passage of the R&D tax credit, grew 45% from a year ago. From a market perspective, we saw nice unit and revenue growth in the PC client group segment, with revenue up 3% and operating profit up 18% on a year-over-year basis. The data center group benefited from the build-out of the cloud, data analytics, and our strong product portfolio. This business achieved 25% revenue growth and 39% profit growth year-over-year. The company saw a modest increase in net inventory levels quarter-over-quarter as we were efficiently managing capacity while ramping Broadwell on 14 nanometer. And the worldwide PC supply chain appears to be healthy, with inventory levels appropriate as we enter the first quarter. These results for the fourth quarter completed a strong year for Intel. Recapping the 2014 financials. For full year 2014, revenue of $55.9 billion was up 6%, operating income of $15.3 billion was up 25%, and earnings per share of $2.31 was up 22% from 2013. Gross margin of approximately 64% in 2014 is up about 4 points from 2013. Spending on R&D and MG&A was $19.7 billion in 2014, up $1 billion from 2013, driven primarily by increased R&D spending and higher profit-dependent spending. In 2014, both our PC business and our data center business outperformed our expectations at the start of the year. PC Client Group revenue grew by 4%. We saw PC Client Group platform volumes grow 8% from a year ago, and inclusive of tablets, we saw 18% unit growth. Operating profit for the PC Client Group segment was up 25% over the same horizon. We saw robust growth in our data center business, with 8% unit growth leading to 18% revenue growth from 2013 and operating profit growth of 31%. Additionally, in comparison to 2013, the Internet of Things segment achieved revenue growth of 19%. The software and services operating segment was up slightly. Our NAND business grew at a fast pace, and although revenue was down for the mobile and communications group, we grew share in tablets. The business continued to generate significant cash with $20.4 billion of cash from operations in 2014. Total cash balances at the end of the year was roughly $14.1 billion, down approximately $6 billion from a year ago. we purchased $10.1 billion in capital assets, down from our prior outlook of $11 billion, as we found efficiencies, optimized the manufacturing network, and increased our factory utilization. In addition, we paid $4.4 billion in dividends. In November, we announced a dividend increase to 96 cents per share on an annual basis, effective for the first quarter of 2015. We repurchased about $10.8 billion of stock in 2014, up from $2.1 billion in 2013. Our net cash balance, total cash less debt, is approximately $340 million, and inclusive of our other longer-term investments, it is more than $4 billion. This is down by over $5.5 billion from the start of the year. As we look forward to the first quarter of 2015, we are forecasting the midpoint of the revenue range at $13.7 billion, plus or minus $500 million, down about 7% from the fourth quarter. This forecast is in line with the average seasonal decline for the first quarter. We are forecasting the midpoint of the gross margin range for the first quarter to be 60%, plus or minus a couple of points. Consistent with the business drivers discussed in the November investor meeting, the 5-point decline from the fourth quarter is primarily driven by higher platform unit costs on 14-nanometer products, higher factory startup costs, and lower platform volumes. Turning to full year 2015, we're planning for revenues to grow in the mid-single digits. We are forecasting the midpoint of our gross margin range at 62%, plus or minus a couple of points. We are forecasting R&D and MG&A spending for the year at $20 billion, plus or minus $400 million. And we are forecasting capital spending of $10 billion, plus or minus $500 million. 2014 was a great year, and the financials demonstrate our strategy in action as we enter 2015. First, we are growing again across a broad range of products and markets. Second, we continue to invest in our core competitive advantages of leadership IP and leadership manufacturing. These competitive advantages are becoming increasingly valuable and increasingly rare. Third, we are in a great position to benefit from the build-out of the cloud and data analytics as we enter 2015, and we expect these trends to drive growth again this year. And last, we continue to execute our strategy of both investing in our business and also generating return for our shareholders via the dividend and the buyback. With that, let me turn it back over to Mark.
Okay, thank you, Brian and Stacey. Moving on to the Q&A, as is our normal practice, we would ask each participant to ask one question and just one follow-up if you have one. Jamie, please introduce our first questioner.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Our first question comes from Chris Danely from Citigroup.
Thanks, guys. And Brian, in all sincerity, congratulations on a great year for yourself and the company. I guess the first question is on gross margins. Can you just talk about, I guess it's for Stacey, the trend in gross margins after Q1? And, you know, embedded in that, do you think that the second half 15 gross margins can be equal to the second half of 14 gross margins? And for this year, assuming something close to normal, can we assume gross margins would be up in 2016 on an apples-to-apples basis?
Hi, Chris. This is Stacey. I'll just start this by saying I'm not going to forecast 2016 gross margins in January of 15. We'll probably talk about those in November. So you're getting a little ahead of me. In terms of what's happening to gross margin. It's very consistent with what we talked about in the November investor meeting. To specifically answer your question, yes, I expect that the second half gross margins will be back above the midpoint. We've forecasted 62% for the year. We're at 60% in Q1. I think the second half will be above that midpoint. The first half will be below. This is all what I told you in November. The big drivers for us here are 14-nanometer. As 14-nanometer becomes a larger mix of our products, we're mixing up in terms of our costs. That is higher than normal in the beginning of the year, and then it will come down and catch up to prior technologies by the time we get into the back half. We have some increase in startup costs. And then we'll get some good news associated with getting back some of the impact associated with tablets. So we get back about half of the impact from 2014 into 2015. In terms of whether that'll match the back half of 2014, I'd say the only thing that I'd point to is 2015 is a year where we have startup costs. So, you know, it's going to be an overhang through the year, and you know our cadence is kind of every other year. So, you know, probably adjusted for that, we're going to be in the same kind of range.
Great. And then for my follow-up, question for Brian, just on the MCG business. So, Brian, I guess we're still losing a little more than $1 billion a quarter, but you said that those losses will go down. You know, any color you can provide on that? Anything you can give us in terms of your overall goals or, you know, goals for the mobile business this year, either in units or profitability or anything else there?
Sure, Chris. So what we said for 2015, so if you remember, step back, in 2014 we said, look, we have to go out and establish a footprint here. We have to, you know, get ourselves known in this market, be considered a serious player, and get the developers attracted, both the hardware and software developers, interested in IA. And so that's, we set a goal, a unit level goal, so we knew we were serious, and we brought parts that were not necessarily designed for this segment in. And that's where the BOM cost deltas came from. For 2015, we feel like we've done a very nice job now of establishing ourselves. We're one of the top producers of silicon in this segment. And our goal right now is, from a unit perspective, is, you know, we think we can just grow roughly at what the market will grow for tablets. So we don't need to go out and necessarily outpace the market or anything like that for this year from a growth perspective. Instead, we're going to focus on two segments, and that is, one, as you just said, getting our cost profiles down, making it so that we're much more cost-effective, and as a result, getting the loss out. Stacy and I committed to drive $800 million out of this business for 15. We believe we have a solid plan to go do that. That's based on a couple of things. One part of this reorganization was to drive efficiency, to get the consistency across the platform to be utilized, and to get the efficiency of people, of hardware, of software, of all of that done. The other one is, as we move into the second half of this year especially, Sophia, which we said was designed for this segment and has no BOM adder or difference, really starts to ramp. And you saw we've already internally qualified our first Sophia, the 3G version. We said the next version, the LTE version, would be in the first half of next year, and they'll ramp through the year. So as those come in, they take a lot of that cost delta out. And that's, we're fairly feeling fairly good about the $800 million. The other place, you saw the Dell Venue 8 7000 is a great example. It was won Best of Innovation at CES and Best of Show at CES. And it's showing a thinnest tablet with real innovation at a $399 price where, you know, people can start to, you know, make money in the tablet space a little bit now again. And so we think the combination of the right products plus real innovation like that will allow us to make real progress.
Thanks.
The next question comes from Mike McConnell from Pacific Crest Securities.
Thank you. Looking at the balance sheet, Stacy, there was a pretty significant spike in receivables in Q4, and DSOs look like they're, you know, pretty elevated relative to levels we've seen the last couple of years. Could you kind of explain what was going on there with the receivables?
Sure. And actually, I think DSOs still are in a healthy range, but the timing, the quarter was a little bit more back-end loaded than Q3 was, and so we ended the quarter with more receivables. It was as simple as that. We started with, we didn't have a terribly strong October, and the quarter strengthened as we went through.
Okay, great. And then just looking at linearity, for DCG, given you've got a new product family, we've got an operating system from Microsoft that's going to be expiring this year. Could you give us any color on how we should expect linearity on a quarterly basis for DCG this year, if it will be any different than what we've seen in the past?
I think we always caution you. It's the PC market, I think we have data that says it behaves roughly seasonal. With DCG, you have to be careful because you have, you know, 5 to 10 very large cloud customers that based on their buying patterns can really change, you know, the quarter-to-quarter trend. So I tend to hesitate to tie too much to seasonal in DCG. When you look at the results over the course of 2014, you know, it was robust unit growth. It was great revenue growth, 18% revenue growth. And as we said in the investor meeting, we think that the underlying trends that are driving that continue into 15. And, you know, we put a forecast out there that said in excess of 15% growth. That's what we still think.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Ambrish Srivastava from BMO Capital Markets.
Hi, thank you, Brian. I just wanted to continue with the question on the mobility side. Based on the drivers that you laid out, should we then expect that the recovery in the operating losses should be more back-end loaded? And then you mentioned that tablets you expect to grow with the end market. And most, at least I'll speak for myself, we expect almost no growth. So is that how you guys are thinking about the tablet market? And then I had a quick follow-up for you, Stacey.
Sure. So let me give you the how we view the market, and then I'll let Stacey talk about how the $800 million is laid out through the year, and then you can talk about the margins too. You know, I've seen forecasts that are at or near zero, as you say. I've seen forecasts that are a slight decline, and I've seen forecasts that have I'll say, you know, 10 to low teen growth in tablets, and it's kind of varied as the fourth quarter went through even. So that's why we've kind of said we'll grow at the rate that the market does. I don't think I want to necessarily shrink, so I, unless the market shrinks significantly, I think we would then probably try and target more of a flattish. But in general, you know, I think saying that we're going to grow a market tells you I'm not going to try and outgrow the market is the message I'm trying to send. And whether it's minus 5, 0, or plus 5 to 10, you know, I call all of that kind of flattish to growing with the market.
Yeah, and on the linearity of the $800 million improvement, you know, there's really at the highest level three things that are improving our profitability this year. So first is bringing Sophia into the product mix. That helps us both from the standpoint of the SOC costs that Sophia has and the contra revenue dollars associated with the bill of material offset that we've been providing, which we don't plan to provide with Sophia. That is back and loaded. We're bringing Sophia into the product family kind of as we speak, but you know, it becomes really significant volume for us when we get into the back half. The second one is the ramp of LTE to offset some of the investments we've been making there. That ramp is underway now, but I would expect the back half volume to be higher than the first half. So that also is a little bit more back-end loaded. And then the third is, as we've said, we're shifting the investment profile, and that's more linear across the year. So those are the three items, and two of those three does put more of the improvement in the back half.
Okay, thank you. And my quick follow-up for you, Stacey, is on the capital allocation side. Last couple of quarters, you did a great job, bought back a lot of stock. But now if I look at the onshore versus offshore on the balance sheet, there's just a $2 billion delta. Could you remind us in terms of the cash flow generated, how much is onshore versus offshore, and then the ramifications for stock buyback? Thank you.
Sure. You know, It varies year by year depending on where we're. Remember, we actually invest in factories around the world, so a lot of the onshore versus offshore will vary based on where we're starting up factories. But the majority of our cash generation is in the U.S. We do generate a lot of cash, and we certainly have the ability to use that for any corporate purposes, including a buyback.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ambrish.
The next question comes from Jim Covello from Goldman Sachs.
Great, guys. Thanks so much for taking the question. First question, Stacey, I see the CapEx is shifting around a little bit. Anything significant there, or were you just able to find a little bit of ability to save some money?
I would term it as a fairly significant reduction in CapEx for 14, and you know, we brought the CapEx for 15 down to the bottom of the range. And it's a variety of things. When I look at the savings we had in 14, about half of it was due to, you know, call it basic blocking and tackling. We, you know, were able to negotiate some lower pricing. We had some non-capacity related projects that we were able to push, you know, out of the year, and we're always looking for those opportunities, and I think the manufacturing organization did a great job of finding them. And then about half of it is, as we progressed over the course of 2014, we learned a couple of things. One is our confidence in yields and our yield forecasts went up. That's what we showed you in the November investor meeting. Secondly, the manufacturing organization demonstrated the ability to start up factories more quickly than we had assumed at the beginning of the year. And the combination of that allowed us to shift out the third HVM 14 nanometer factory that starts up now kind of mid-15 out by 2 to 3 months. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, given how capital intensive those factories are, that actually gives us a much more capital efficient ramp, and, you know, we're able to generate some savings as a result of it.
That's helpful. Thank you. And as a follow-up, Brian, I mean, could you just on the highest level maybe give us a sense of how you think the PC market stands today entering 2015 compared to how it was entering 2014? You know, some of the ODM data would suggest, you know, we exited 2014 a little weaker, but that may just be a function of that weak October that Stacey had mentioned in terms of the linearity and things. You know, maybe it really is more similar than we thought, even though the quarterly data isn't quite as good in 14 as it was in 13. But maybe if you could offer your perspective there. Thank you.
So I'm not sure of all your statistics that you just threw out there, Jim, but let me just give you our view of the PC market. I think when we look at Q4, and then again, as you look at 14 overall, it was a very strong, it played out exactly as we forecasted and had predicted. Q4 ended up being very much a seasonal quarter. We saw, you know, demand in the more mature markets stronger, especially on the consumer side, than in the emerging markets. And as Stacey mentioned, our inventories as we exit Q4, we're very comfortable with where the inventories are. So remember, as we exited Q3 and kind of entered Q4, there was some concern there might have been a little inventory. We feel like we've burned that off through the system, especially a lot of that was down at the low end. And as we exit Q4, we're very comfortable with the inventory. You know, for me, as I look out into now 15, I look at it and say, okay, we've got Core M, which is just, you know, really hit the market as we entered into the holiday season. We saw great, thin, fanless 2-in-1 devices at all price points that I believe will stimulate, you know, usage there. We've got the Broadwell U, which is the first of the really the high-volume Broadwells, just hitting the market. We've got something, you know, a dozen systems in Q1 that will be coming out on Broadwell. You saw us introduce RealSense. At CES, we have, I think, 7 or 8 systems in the first quarter coming out with RealSense and that combination. So I look at the amount of innovation, all of the OSs we're on, and the availability and the, really the optionality a consumer has for OS or an enterprise, and the price points. You know, you've got PCs from Chromebooks down in the $199. Windows systems, $249, all the way up from there to the real innovative systems like Sprout. I look at it and say the innovation and the options of the PC market have never been better. So I'm feeling pretty good about where we are in the PC market. If you remember, our forecast is based even still on flat units and a slight decrease in ASP. So we're still, even though I've told you, oh, there's all this innovation and there's that, we've still been relatively conservative and said it's a flat unit year and a slight decline even in ASPs given that.
And if I could just emphasize one point on Q4, you know, I think we characterize it as pretty normal from an in-demand standpoint. we undershipped demand some in Q4, so there was an inventory burn. And what we now think happened as we look back is there was a bit of inventory, particularly Bay Trail, lower-end systems, when we started the quarter. That led to some weakness in the first few weeks, and then it caught back up as we worked our way through the quarter and burned through that inventory, and then we saw it behave a bit more normally from a shipment pattern.
It's really helpful, guys. Thanks so much, and good luck.
Thanks, Jim.
The next question comes from David Wong from Wells Fargo.
Thanks very much. You talked about blocking and tackling to bring down CapEx, but your $10 billion 2014 CapEx and then your 2015 plan is almost a billion below $10.7 to $11 billion in every year, 2011 to 2013. So are you actually on a permanently higher level of capital efficiency? And if that's the case, what would your long-term CapEx as a percent of revenue be?
No, I'll say, David, this the fact that we were at 10 and 14 and we're at 10 and 15 doesn't change my long-term view. If you think about what I showed in the investor meeting, you know, I showed that we've kind of been between 10 and 11. We're at the low end of that for a couple of years. I still think that's the right range for us. Within that, you know, two-thirds to three-quarters is manufacturing capacity related, and then the rest is non-manufacturing CapEx.
Okay, great. And when do you expect to offer 10-nanometer capability to foundry customers?
You know, we are timing on 10 nanometers. I'm not going to come out with when we'll be introducing our 10-nanometer to the marketplace in general, probably until the end of this year. So we'll give, as we go through the year, probably by the investor meeting in November, we'll give you an outlook on how and what timing is for 10 nanometers.
Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Stacy Rasgon from Sanford Bernstein.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. I think first I just want to, it sounds like the slightly weaker PC volume you saw in Q4 is not changing your 2015 of the market at all. If the inventory burn that you saw in the channel was at the low end, we saw ASPs come up, I guess, because you were losing some of that low-end shipment. What does that suggest for your ASP trend next quarter as potentially those, and I guess I should ask, do you see those inventory trends going back the other way, and what does that mean for pricing as we move into next quarter? Does the low end start to come back for you?
Yeah, I'll take that. So, first off, I'll say the ASP good news that we saw in Q4 really had three elements to it. One element was the fact that, you know, we saw some inventory burn on Bay Trail, so our mix within notebooks was a little bit higher. Think of that in rough numbers, that's about a third of it. And about two-thirds of it is associated with server. We just had a very strong quarter in terms of server, and our server mix is starting to look better, starting to improve some. So that's about two-thirds of it. In terms of the impact on Q1, you know, it's not jumping out on the margin recon, so you should take from that we're expecting, you know, pretty benign ASP environment as we go into the year, and it also doesn't pop out on the year recon. So it's not a big driver of gross margin next year based on what we can see today.
Got it. And for my follow-up, I want to ask maybe a more general question on 14 versus 22. So for 14 nanometers, you've shown a lot of charts showing normalized cost per transistor dropping below trend. Obviously, wafer cost is going up quite a bit, but your density seems to be increasing even faster, and that's going down. But that's a normalized basis. At the same time, we've had yields that obviously have taken a bit longer to get into place. We have factory ramps that seem to be hitting more than normal in the first half of the year. Would you say that the all-in cost of the lifetime of 14 nanometers actually is going to turn out to be lower than the all-in cost of 22?
Hey, Stacey, I would take you back to the graph I showed at the investor meeting, because I actually, a non-normalized cost that showed Broadwell relative to other products at the same stage of manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And so what that chart shows is that, sure enough, in the first half of this year, so the early stage of the Broadwell ramp, because of some of the yield issues that we've talked about, it is higher. It's on a non-normalized basis, it's a higher cost. But by the time we get into the back half of the year, on a non-normalized basis, Broadwell actually is less expensive than those other products at the same stage of their life.
Mm-hmm. So you think if I integrate that curve over the lifetime, the integration, the integral will be lower?
Hey, Stacy, we'll go ahead and answer that question, but I just want to remind you we're trying to take two questions per person, please.
Sure. Thank you.
So honestly, I haven't done a volume weighted ramping or a volume weighted cost comparison. I've just looked at it in the curves that I showed you. So I guess a lot of it depends on how much volume happens after we get to that point of parity and improvement. But I think that the cost per transistor and the fact that we are investing that in lower die sizes and more features, we think we're getting super high performance and very cost-effective product on 14 nanometer.
Got it. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Stacy.
The next question comes from Ruben Roy from Piper Jaffray.
Thank you. First question for Brian, just around Sophia and some of the commentary that you had on expectations for a solid ramp in the second half. Just qualified internally, I believe. Is the chip qualified on network, and can you talk about design win traction at this point?
Sure. So we have, let me start, there's a series of Sophia products. There's the Sophia, the first of the products is the Sophia 3G, which is basically has a 3G modem. The second product will be a Sophia LTE modem. What we said was the 3G modem version, the Sophia 3G, has finished its internal qualification, which means that we've gone through and made sure that the apps processor is fully functional, the modem's working, all of that work is done. It's electrically and logically functional. We are in the process now of we've got several design wins, and I'm just never able to go and tell you, but it's with all of our major OEMs and partners plus some. We are in the process now of going out to the carriers and getting, you know, the carrier certifications. And that's why we said it actually, you know, that's the difference, the time difference between ramping a product or qualifying the product in Q4 internally and before our customers can ramp in the first half is a lot of that qualification and getting it out there into the rest of the world. Same thing will happen. We said we would qualify internally in the first half, the LTE, with a ramp of the second half. It's that same process that's going to occur.
Thank you for that, Brian. Just a quick follow-up for Stacy on the data center side. Solid year for ASP growth, and I think over the last few years you've been averaging kind of mid to high single-digit ASP growth. Can you talk a little bit about the drivers behind that and if you think that's sustainable over the next couple of years? Thanks.
I think I've said in the past, I view ASP growth in the data center product line as being much more akin to capacity additions. So, you know, as the performance of the machines go up, as people move up in terms of, you know, one-way servers to two-way to four-way servers, what we see that as a increase in ASP. But it really is, from the standpoint of a CIO, an increase in capacity that they go and buy. You know, how sustainable it will be, I don't know. But, you know, it is a segment of the market where as we bring technology in and that technology brings benefit to the customers and increases their capacity and decreases their operating costs, you know, we get paid for advancing technology faster than others can do it. I don't know, Brian, if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think you covered it well.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ruben.
The next question comes from John Pitzer from Credit Suisse.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Brian, Stacy, nice job on the quarter. My first question, Stacy, is a follow-up on gross margins. You've given us Q1, and you've told us that second half is going to be above that kind of full-year guide of 62. I'm kind of curious, relative to how you see the first half playing out, is Q1 going to be the trough, or do you have more sort of non-operational things like startup costs in the June quarter that could actually have gross margins go down again sequentially in June before rebounding in the second half?
Yeah, I'm not sitting on a bunch of bad news for Q2, so you know, I would expect Q1 to be, you know, the trough for the year.
That's helpful. And then for my follow-up, Brian, one of the things that happened when PC penetration slowed was that mix actually got better than I think a lot of us from the outside looking in thought. Do you think that now that tablet penetration growth seems to be slowing, that we could see some stabilization of mix or even some mix-up? Or how do you view the tablet market as unit growth begins to slow relative to mix?
You know, that's an interesting question, John. I think that almost like the PC, you know, if you really look back at the PC began to kind of bifurcate. You did see systems coming in at lower and lower price points, right? And you saw, you know, kind of the bottom of the PC market go from the $500 range to, as we said, now you can go out there and get a good system, $249 all the way down to $199 with Chrome. I think, and then you saw, but at the same time, as you said, we saw record Core i7 and the gaming PCs are hitting record levels, and so the high end kind of did very well as well, and we've been working on filling in that middle. I think the same thing's going to happen on tablets. You are going to see a robust low end of the tablets. You know, I go to Shenzhen, I see what's coming out of China right now, and there's some good low-cost tablets that are going to come out and continue to drive probably that average ASP of systems down into the $700 range. At the same time, I think you see systems that, you know, we've got them coming with all of our major OEMs, Lenovo, Dell, HP, systems with real innovation, things like the RealSense Snapshot, thinner and lighter, longer battery lives, better screens, edge-to-edge screens. People are willing, if you bring the innovation, a $399 tablet, maybe $299 to $399 tablet is not an unreasonable price if you bring a performance or capability that's new and innovative. So I think we'll get that same kind of effect, yes, in the tablet space that we saw in the PC space as well.
Perfect. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Thanks, John.
The next question comes from Ross Seymour from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me ask a question. Stacy, a couple for you, actually. The first one is on full-year R&D spend. It looks like you're growing that in line to slightly even faster than the midpoint of the revenue side of things. Can you just give us a little bit of detail why the R&D is going to be up about 6% year over year, especially given it's either the tick or the talk year where some of the expense goes up into COGS?
Yeah, there's I'd say two things to point to. So first of all, we are making increases in R&D investment in areas where, you know, Brian and I have looked and believe we're going to get a significant payoff on those investments. So specifically, Data Center Group, the Internet of Things Group, and a bit more towards process technology. And then we're offsetting some of that with decreases in investment in other areas that you've seen, the MCG segment being top of that list, and some efficiencies across our product engineering group. I'd also point to the second phenomenon, which is the acquisition of Axia, which is going into the Data Center Group and increases our product or improves our product portfolio there in the networking space, is bringing along some R&D cost associated with that. And so that's part of what is adding to the R&D spending next year.
And I guess as my follow-on, in somewhat similar, we talked a little bit about this at CES, but Stacey, I wanted to get your view. Broadwell's launching in the fourth quarter and then starting to ramp now. Skylake, it sounds like you want to continue to have that be on time in the early part of the second half of this year. To the extent that the Broadwell duration is shorter than normal, what sort of business implications, whether it be on the revenue, the COGS, et cetera, line, should we think of to hit the financials throughout the year?
Well, this is Brian. Let me first kind of answer how we're looking at this. I mean, we're not going to slow Skylake down. We said it'll be the second half of this year. I don't want to slow it down because it brings a lot of innovation, a lot of new capability to this market. We think we've managed between the SKUs of what SKUs we're bringing out on Broadwell to really refresh the two-in-one devices, the Chromebooks. We wanted to bring Core M out, which, you know, I think in the first part of this year with Chinese New Year, the back-to-school season, having these super thin and light devices is going to be critical. So missing that by doing something else with Broadwell would have been a mistake. And I think, you know, getting that volume is a good thing. We think we've managed the transition on the number of SKUs of Broadwell we'll have and how we'll transition the market to Skylake now moving forward from a margin or COGS standpoint.
Yeah.
But remember, they're on the same technology. It's the same piece of silicon. It's the same factory. All we do is change the piece of glass in the scanner to get a different product. So there's not a change or revamp of our factories that needs to occur for this.
Yeah, that last point is important. They're both 14 nanometer products for us, so it doesn't change our factory profile. And just generally, the faster we bring out new features and cool stuff to the market, the better off we are. So we're not planning to slow down Skylake, if that was at the heart of your question.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from C.J. Muse from Evercore ISI.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thank you for taking my question. I guess first question, Brian, I wanted to, clarify a comment you made earlier. I think you said that you were driving $800 million out of the business in mobility in 15, including a reorg to drive efficiencies. And I guess my question here is, does that include also the benefit of lower contra revenues?
Yes.
That's an all-in number.
Yeah, it's the efficiencies we'll gain from the organizational structure. We're doing continued I'll call it fundamental cost reduction, getting the right PMIX in there, reducing the board count, board layers, that kind of, I'll call it basic engineering, and the introduction, the increased percentage of Bay Trail cost reduction at the beginning, and then introduction of Sophia in the second half, which has no contra revenue. So you put all of those together and they'll add up to that $800 million.
And the ramp of LTE. That's the third.
Great. And then I guess as my follow-up, can you provide, I guess, some additional color on the Rockchip and Spreadtrum side? Would love to hear what milestones perhaps we should be watching for.
I think let's start with Rockchip. On Rockchip, we've actually been working with them on their first design. It's an enhancement to the 3G. So it's Sophia 3GR. You'll see it. It's got some enhancements to the graphics and some other functionality. I think you'll see that in 2015. They've already got their first silicon out. You'll have to go talk to them. Again, part of it is they have a certain level of independence. They're going to ramp and launch that product when they feel ready. But, it's the first silicon's out and they're going at their validation and certification. So, we're right on schedule. I'd say actually we're slightly ahead of schedule with Rockchip. And we'll continue to bring designs. Their next one will move to LTE just like ours and then keep moving on just right in line with ours, just a little bit, maybe a quarter or two after our exemplary product as well. From a Spreadtrum, that deal closed more in the second half of the year. We've started to work with them with the product definitions done. We're working on exactly what their Sophia will look like. And, we'll progress through that through this year. But the relationship and the kind of the model of having them produce Sophia derivatives with additional features or additional capabilities targeted towards their specific market and channels is exactly the same methodology that we'll take.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, CJ. And operator, we're going to go ahead and take two more questions, please.
The next question comes from Matt Ramsey from Canaccord Genuity.
Thank you very much for taking my question. Brian, I wanted to ask on DCG, obviously a really big quarter in December, up about $1 billion from the March quarter. Apparently, you talked a bit about it being lumpy with the cloud customers. Maybe you can talk about what part of that big jump in revenue from September to December was from first-time purchases of Grantley. And I guess the longer-term question I'm asking is the health of the enterprise server market relative to some weaker trends we saw earlier in the year and a recovery in the back half of 14. Thanks.
Yeah, this is Stacey. We're not going to get that granular, I don't think, Matt, in terms of the breakout of the DCG revenue. I would say what we saw in Q4 was we saw strength in enterprise, and then we continue to see those robust growth rates in cloud and networking and data analytics. Beyond that, I'm not going to break it out.
Fair enough. And Brian, as a follow-up in the mobile group, obviously obviously great work in hitting the target on the tablet units. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the market reception and the health of the channel for those products, particularly since a lot of those are Chinese OEMs with sort of the setup for Chinese New Year on the tablet side. Thanks.
Sure. I'd tell you that the market reception and the channel so far for the Intel tablets has been very strong. There's a strong brand value just in the Intel tied to a tablet, no matter who is the manufacturer. The tablets we've made with Lenovo and Dell and many of the, I'll call it major OEMs, have been selling very well. And you saw the great reception the Dell Venue 8, for example, 7000 got at CES. I'll call it the more broad products that are coming out of China, more of the Shenzhen marketplace. So far, they've been selling quite well. And the number of OEMs that are working with us in that space and the amount of innovation and breadth that they're bringing to these products has surpassed even what our expectations were. And as we show them things like RealSense and WiDi and WiGi, all these capabilities, both in the tablet and the PC space, we're seeing a lot of innovation coming out of that Chinese market, Chinese manufacturer space.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Matt. And operator, please go ahead and introduce our last questioner.
The final question comes from Vivek Arya from Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Thank you for taking my question. As my first one, Brian, how important is the recovery in emerging markets to maintaining your expectations for flattish PC growth? And how are you balancing the push there in terms of the low-cost tablets versus PCs?
Sure. So if you remember, Vivek, what we said for the year was we'd be roughly flat in units. We also forecasted a roughly similar worldwide economic or worldwide demand scenario is what we're seeing today. So we did not build in a big recovery or big resurgence of the emerging markets into our 15 model. So we are not dependent on an emerging market recovery or return in order to make our numbers for 15. The next question you asked is, what about tablets and, you know, the low-end tablet? And I'd really say it's the low-end tablet and the emergence of the phablet in that space versus the PC. And we think that, you know, if I took a look at that, the phablet is probably taking a little bit more out of the tablet than the PC. I think people still are going to use the PC for their high-end usages, when they have to have a keyboard, when they have to have the higher-end compute. For the low-end kind of, you know, I want to look at the material, I want to watch a video, I want to, you know, scan my data, you know, it's the phablet and the tablet that are kind of battling it out for the user in that space, I'd say. And you could, you know, you see the large growth that's occurring in phablets in the emerging markets. So bottom line, we're not expecting an emerging market recovery. We're not building our forecast on that. And so that's why we're feeling comfortable with our current PC forecast.
Got it. And just as a quick follow-up, you mentioned the ramp in discrete LTE. I know you have done very well at Samsung. Any more progress there and just the broadly customer diversification on your LTE chip for this year? Thank you.
Yeah, we continue to win other customers. You know, we don't talk about customers until the products are launched, but we're pretty comfortable with the design wins we're getting. You see it, at, as you said, there's some at Samsung, there's some at Lenovo. You'll see them coming into Rockchip and Spreadtrum in the second half of the year with their parts, their Sophia parts, and there's several others. We just aren't going to talk about those until they're ready to announce the products.
Thank you.
Thanks, Vivek. And thank you all for joining us today. Jamie, please go ahead and wrap up the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference for today. Again, thank you for your participation. You may all disconnect. Have a good day.